Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey Mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Sarah Stefanelli.
And I'm tired of you doing the intro. We talked about this during season one, and you just got away with it all through season two and three.
We just bullshitted for a half hour, and now I'm already tired.
Can I do the intro for this episode?
Go ahead.
Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey Mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Joe Stefanelli.
And I'm Sarah Stefanelli. We will be taking you through The Sopranos one episode at a time, one podcast episode at a time.
Yeah, I like that. It establishes that I'm in charge.
You know what? We're halfway through. Switch it up.
Done. The audience really likes it too. I can feel them going, you can feel yes, it. This
okay,
is it.
Okay, we're halfway through. We'll swap it. Go.
Today, we're going to be discussing season 3, episode 7, Second Opinion.
And here's my ep summary.
Oh, you're going to read my summary?
Yes. We're do swapping. It. You just did it. That's usually the part I do. After meeting with the Dean of Columbia, Carmela is obsessed with the idea of donating $50,000 to the school because $5,000 is a slap in the face to these guys. After Tony says no, Carmela finds herself reaching out to Dr. Melfi and then Dr. Kowakower?
Krakower.
Well, you spelled that wrong then. For a second opinion. Carmela is not the only one seeking a second opinion, as Junior is undergoing ways to rid himself of cancer and with the help of Dr. John Kennedy. Meanwhile, tensions are rising between Christopher and and panty sniffing Polly. This aired on April 8th, 2001.
I knew when you started, I went, she's going to get to the end and not know what the end says.
Yeah, I didn't read that. That was the first time I read it. Did I do a good job?
That was pretty well done. Yeah. I'm not editing any.
It's weird. I'm literate and stuff. Okay. So.
It's nice, the levity, because after the last three episodes, I feel we need some levity.
So honestly, so I was just about to say, I really, really like this episode. And I think that has a lot to do with it, that it was like I could just enjoy the episode again. You know,
I agree. I don't love it as much as you do, though.
I just really, really like this episode. I think it's Carmela for me, who, because I love this episode.
Sure.
Yeah.
Edie Falco won her Emmy Award.
She's the reason I love this episode, is what I meant to say.
Yeah, she gives a great performance. I don't think it's Edie Falco's best performance. Maybe of season three it is. I mean, again, she won the Emmy for this episode, mm-hmm. but it's definitely not her best of the series, you know what I mean? But she's won multiple times. One notable, really, that she wins for coming up. But she's great. She's great in it. I mean, you know, it's really the start of her arc of, okay, what's going on with my marriage? What's my real question? Am I going to stay with this man? Am I not? It really is a compelling story that begins here and lasts for quite a while. So,
and I would argue not even her marriage, but her being an accomplice in all of this. It's that struggle right. as well. Yeah. Huh. Favorite scene?
The Carmela Meadows scene in the dorm.
Why?
I always love that scene. I just think I love when two characters go into a room and argue and they're both right. Carmela goes in and says, I love when she says, you know what? It has nothing to do with your father. You stayed with Noah a lot longer, so don't take this out on your father. Mm-hmm. And she brings that flyer to her and says, I hope you're taking advantage. But deep down, I know, like, I was in college. No, you don't have time to take all that shit, all the seminars and everything. But no. Carmela's right, and Carmela brings her food, and Carmela knows that she's been invited to go with the dean. And of course you go when the dean invites you, and she's right. But Meadow's right, too. Like, why are you going to meet with the dean? That's embarrassing and it's corrupt and you don't need to go. And you know, and Carmela says, well, what are you reading? And Meadow's kind of bitchy about it. But Meadow's right. Like, there is a point in college where you're like, we're way past that. Like, I don't even know what that book is anymore because I'm past it. And, you know, and Carmela's like, you should have time to read fiction. I'm reading the new, not Daniel Steele, but whatever the
equivalent. Yeah.
And she's like, I wish I had time for fiction. Like, you're both so bitchy to each other, but you're both so right in the way you're doing it.
Daughter like mother.
Yeah, I just really like it. It's two actresses really sparring off each other, and I think it's really great.
Cool.
For some reason, this is one of those episodes I don't ever remember that it's in this scene, in this episode. You know, but right. It's when it comes up, I go, oh yeah, that's right. I like this scene.
Cool. I think my favorite scene has to be when Carmela tells her parents that she's seeing Tony's therapist, and just good family fight. And then when she calls out her parents and says, I earn it, you two get a free pass with all of the, you know, the bonuses of having a mafia man in the family. It's interesting to see Carmela's view of it all, right? It's really the first time we realize she knows what she gets. And she, in her perspective, she's earning it because she's supporting this man at home and she puts up with a lot of stuff. And it's interesting. And by the end of the episode, her therapist, I really, really like him, but he does kind of, it's like a little too
feeding the audience.
No, I think it's feeding the spoon, feeding the audience like a little too much, but it is important. So. You know, he says, you know, I'm not taking the blood money and she needs to leave. It's just, it's like supposed to be shocking, but at the same time, like, he didn't have to be that blunt about it. I think the audience could have put it all together themselves. I think he's just a little spoon feedy, or it is satisfying to hear someone tell Carmela this bluntly. So it goes both ways for me.
And I also think, as smart as we might be as an audience, I don't think Carmela is as smart. I think Carmela needs to hear that.
Right. That's fair.
But I am going to contradict. I'm going to save a theory I have, but because it's going to contradict what I just said, but I'm a complex person. So sure. I'm going to save that. I'm going to say it later. Do you find it interesting that neither one of us chose that therapy scene?
Okay, yes. And I also find it, I thought your favorite scene was going to be the ending scene when Carmela's laying on the couch and he's talking to her.
My theory is, do I just say it?
Just say it. What are you talking about?
She's faking that whole thing. She is what? Not depressed in that scene. She's laying on the couch. She knows what to do. He's going to come home. I'm going to lay on the couch and I'm going to just turn to him and say, I said 50,000, and she's going to win. And the tip of the iceberg is when he says, well, let's go out to dinner. And she just gets up. She goes, I won. And she does it in this ambiguous fashion of, is she just kind of like dragging herself because she's still depressed? No, it's her slow walk to victory. I think she's faking that whole thing.
Listen, I no matter what is going on in my household, it could be anything. Christian could turn to me and go, do you want to go out to eat? I'd be like, yeah, let's go. This is funny. So in college, Christian and I had a fight and we broke up on Valentine's Day.
Oh.
Yeah. It was just like, we had a fight and it was like, blah, blah, you know, stupid, whatever. We were together like 3 days later. So I was crying to my roommate. And sorority sisters. And we had a walk-in closet. And that makes it sound like we lived in a really nice house, and we did not. I just need to make that very clear. But I had this, but that's important to the story, because I went into the closet and I changed into a pink dress. And I came out of the closet and they went, why are you dressed? And I went, well, we're still going to dinner. And then we went out to dinner.
You and Christian because still went out to dinner.
We love going out to dinner. And it was just like, and then we like made up at dinner because we talked it out. And they still to this day, like Janelle will be like, remember when you came out of the closet? I'm saying, we're still going to dinner.
My wife and I have this interesting thing where like, we wait for the other one to say it. Like, especially when it's like the 11th or 12th of the month and we just both haven't been paid yet. We're like, we really shouldn't go to dinner.
Right. You're like, it always like is that guilt in the middle of the week, especially. You're like, oh, we really shouldn't. But like, it's just great. It is great to go out to dinner.
Last week, she got out the griddle. The kid said, we want pancakes for dinner. We were like, fine, we'll have breakfast
Heck
for
yeah.
dinner.
Heck yeah.
She Whip gets out the griddle, and Mai look at her go, I don't feel like cleaning that. Because I know if she cooks, I'm going to clean the griddle. And she said, well, what do you want to do then? We told the kids pancakes. I said, how about I just run to the diner and get them pancakes?
Just get pancakes, yeah.
And she said, good, go. 5 minutes later, we're all in the car on the way to the diner.
1,000%. I was going to say, why didn't you all just go to the diner?
Because it was a Tuesday. It was.
I love it, though. But like, those are the things that your kids will remember. Like, remember we would just go to the diner and like, I hope they were in comfy clothes, you know, like whatever.
Adam was in his school uniform still.
Okay, hold on a second. We used to stay in our school uniforms. I used to stay in my school uniform from 6 a.m. to midnight. And then I'd go to bed and then get up and put it back on.
Yeah, you start the outfit. You don't end. You know, that's it. It's got to carry on the day.
But don't you think most people would come home and change? Like, I wore a kilt for most of my childhood.
If I wear a shirt and tie to work, which I did today, I wore that shirt and tie until I changed into my pajamas.
And tie?
Yeah.
You keep the tie on?
Drives dad crazy.
It drives daddy crazy?
It drives daddy crazy. When I was in Catholic school and I used to keep my tie on all day, he goes, at least take the tie off. I was like, why? It completes the outfit.
You're sick.
Looks great.
That is kind of weird. Like, I feel like men, I mean, I don't wear ties, but okay, we're really going off here. Okay, this episode was jam-packed with quotes.
It really was.
Packed with quotes. And I made a comment here that, oh, you know, I'll choose one or two, but I don't want to.
Give them three. Give us all
three.
Go ahead.
Okay, so when AJ says,
we're going to FBI headquarters.
So?
Just the delivery that James Gandolfini get the food's kind of still in his mouth, and he goes slow. It's one syllable. It's perfect. He's just amazing. And then talking about pussy when Tony goes on his rant, kind of, and he says, "I'd look in Arizona, stake out all the TGI Fridays. He loves their wings." And I want to point out, I thought that was very funny. And I want to point out though that he doesn't slip and talk about pussy in the past tense. But later, Carmella is referring to Angie when they're fighting on the driveway. She brings up pussy and talks about him. Or no, she talks about Angie as a widow.
Yes. I wrote that note too.
Okay,
yes.
That is so interesting because it's
bullshit.
But no one says it. No one has said it out loud yet. And Carmella just does on their driveway and throws it out like that, especially when they were just talking about pussy in a previous scene. This one I'm talking about when he talked about him in the present tense like he was still alive. I thought that was very jarring when she did that.
Similar to the ideas when I wrote down during that scene that you're referring to, why wouldn't they bring Angie with them? Like I wrote, that's not something they're covering. And then Tony says it. That how terrible was the FBI that they didn't take her with him. I'm like, oh, that was clever, Tony. But the truth is they would have taken her. Like you're basically acknowledging the fact that this is a bullshit lie I've made up.
Or he's covering his ass. I don't think he's acknowledging a bullshit lie he made up. I think he's trying to cover it.
Well, this episode also acknowledges that Carmella is an accomplice without being accomplice.
Yes, right.
So I kind of think it does, kind of. It's his way of being like, just shut the fuck up, Carmella. I can't say this. Like he did when Richie was killed.
But she does. She says it. Oh, yeah. She's a bad accomplice. Carmella, shut up.
I don't think she's cut out for this world.
Yeah, what? Okay, so I have one more I want to point out. And it's when Junior says,
well, you know, you're getting better. That's the important thing. You look better, too.
If you're going to lie to me, tell me there's a broad waiting in the car. I want to tongue my balls.
Hey, you want that? It's a phone call away.
Just that is the way Tony can show love to him. And that is just brilliant. Great lines. What about
you? It's hard to listen to that without imagining one of those young strippers.
I didn't need to think about it again. But also, duh, who, like, of course it's one of those young strippers.
Oh, it's gross.
Okay.
I have my favorite one is also a junior. I particularly love when John Kennedy gives him paperwork to sign and says, take your time. And he says,
you tell me to take a crap on the deck of the Queen Mary. An hour later, they're hosing it down with disinfectant.
It's one of those old man things, I feel like. I think he said that his whole life, but we finally got it. Like, I could totally hear one of our grandfathers saying that line and just chuckling, whether it be about any, just someone you trust.
I can't picture one of our grandfathers saying that because he passed away when I was in mommy's time.
He was. And I'm actually going to talk about him a little bit, too.
Really? Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, a little later we're going to talk about him.
I don't have stories about him, so I get excited when we talk about him.
And my other one is, I'm just going to, I love a good Furio quote.
You just forgot his name. Are you okay?
I love a good Furio quote.
Yeah, he's in the scene only.
Anyway, what am I going to do with it? I already got one, and Mr. Williams here, he don't play, right?
Stupid the fucking game.
I would do it for you, but I know that I'm bad at the Italian accents.
Horrible accents, but also, like, is golf a stupid the fucking game?
Yeah, it is. It is. We have my son in golf lessons, and I don't get it.
Love it. People yeah. love it. My husband loved it. People love golf, and I don't really understand.
Our pop-up, who died before you were born. Huge golf fan.
He had to, though. He was gone. That was a rule.
I think you have to say it louder because we're an audio podcast and people did not hear what you just
said. I said he was Scottish. I said a funny, like, racial thing about Scottish people. I assume they wear kilts and play golf.
You watched the episode before I did. You took your notes before I did, which is rare for us. And I did not write down a theme because I think you handled it.
You think I handle the theme? I think you're lazy.
No, I agreed with you.
Okay, so what I think it is that we all make big decisions, or sometimes we're faced with really big decisions in our life, particularly about a difficult decision in a toxic relationship. So a few examples are Carmela is our big example. She's going through this. I'm an accomplice. I spend blood money. Do I stay with Tony? Christopher also is staying in this tense relationship with Polly and sucking it up, right? He's deciding, like, I got to do what I got to do. Kind of Tony tells him the same thing. Deal with it. Junior is making tough decisions to go see another doctor and it kind of fires back on him when he does that. So he's in this toxic trust relationship with this doctor who kind of plays with his life just because he goes to get another doctor's opinion, which I think is so unprofessional. You know, I thought Dr. Cusimano was a bad doctor. This guy's bad.
But it's interesting because that's on a deeper level. He goes to Tony for the second opinion about what he should do. And then Tony says, go to the second doctor. Like, there's deeper levels of second opinion.
Going on that, these people even get a second opinion about these relationships with others, right? So Carmela ignores her second opinion from her therapist. Christopher listens to Tony about Polly, like I just said, right? He goes to a second opinion to Tony. And then Junior listens to his second opinion, Tony's second opinion, and it hurts him.
And that doctor, by the way, the second opinion, went for a second opinion by going to the committee. So even the doctor who was the second opinion got a second opinion from the committee, which is how this all worked out.
Yeah. Love it.
Surprisingly, I think you handled that theme all by yourself really well.
Surprisingly.
I'm just glad that you chose a theme and not a motif. How about we talk about symbolism?
Okay. I have a lot of symbolism too.
You do? You stole a lot of mine, though.
Yo, what is with this? Okay, I definitely didn't steal it this time because you said I did my notes first.
I know, but I would have come up with a lot of these.
What the fuck is wrong with you? Okay. Okay. When Junior is going under anesthesia, you hear him say peppers and eggs, almost like a question, like a suspicious question, like peppers and eggs. And I found
that is actually from an episode.
Oh, yes. And all of the lines were. But I found that just interesting that it was during the sequence. And you hear Olivia's voice, etc.
It's worth noting, going back to that episode where he says it, he does not have the peppers and eggs. What he's saying is, oh, you ordered peppers and eggs. I should have. It's always worth noting that Junior never eats eggs on screen.
But, and I think the way he says it during this dream, you don't have to remember. You don't have to remember that happened. You just hear that he's not going to have them because he seems like, oh, peppers and eggs. Like, you hear that he's not going to eat peppers and eggs.
Yeah.
In the way he says it.
You think it was really happening? When did you know it's a dream?
Immediately.
I don't know it. I always forget it until they say, we'll give you a cure. Part of me does think, is the FBI in that room? Are they insensitive enough that they would come in and...
Oh, no, I don't know. I hear you. I don't think that's crazy to think, but no, I thought I knew that it was a dream right away. Yeah. The singing bass, Tony recognizes it as a representation of pussy, so he sees that symbolism.
Who Tony... also sang to the feds.
Ooh, like a fucking canary.
Right.
The scene when Carmela goes to see Melfi on her own, we see Carmela in between that statue's legs, right? The opening scene of the pilot is Tony through those legs.
And everything, even the way she's looking at it, is everything.
Everything is the same. Yeah. And we wonder, you know, okay, Livia has passed. Tony's talked about his mom. Are we about to learn how Carmela's mom messed her up? Because we had said the statue represents the birthing of us as people. And we already see that there is this tenseness between her and her mom at the beginning of this episode. So I found that very interesting.
And I also thought it was interesting that she says, I don't like that statue.
Yes. She acknowledges the statue.
Yeah.
After Carmela talks to Angie, we cut to Adriana watching Everybody Loves Raymond, another Italian family with an infamous crazy mother. And we're huge fans of that show, you and me.
Big time.
And they are talking about a wallpaper guy. Like Deborah is saying wallpaper guy. The Deborah, the character on the show, just to be clear, yeah. If no one has seen that show. And it's a really reminder that Carmela, you know, has these human relationships with people really outside of her family that Tony is not involved in. And we'll see now she'll be involved with this doctor that Tony doesn't know about, etc. There was something with 319 being Meadow's dorm room number. It's the last day of winter. Is that it's about to be spring? Does it represent a new beginning? And it's while we hear this song, she always gets her way, which plays again at the closing credits, which happened last episode, which we said was rare, and now it happened again.
Yes.
So it's strange. 319 is St. Joseph's Day, your anniversary.
That's what I was going to say. That's why that number is important to me. I'm going to say I don't buy that as a symbol. The song lyrics, I actually think we're very on the nose too much. We get it. And she's literally, we're staring at her for an abnormally long time. We're watching Carmela's face as she herself is listening to this song. This is, you know, we always talk about songs don't get played over scenes very often.
She hears that song. Yeah.
And she always gets her way.
Leave it on. It's nice.
She wants to see other guys get lost in other eyes. Babies in the bath. Yes, she's in the...
Carmela is smoking a cigarette. And we say the Sopranos do this when they feel out of control. Then Tony is getting at her about the OJ. So that was interesting. She throws the phone at him. That's violent. It's a whole fight about orange juice. So that was interesting.
It says with pulp.
You like it with pulp?
Not this much. I like the one that says some pulp. The fuck was that for?
I'll write you up a list.
Do you like pulp?
I don't like pulp. Do you like pulp?
No, I don't understand why any human does.
Yeah, I kind of don't get it either.
You know who liked pulp?
Who?
Nana.
Really?
Nana liked pulp, and I never drank orange juice at her house. It was disgusting.
Like a lot of pulp?
I mean, I don't know if she's Tony-level pulp, but I don't know.
She's Tony-level pulp.
But no, she liked pulp, but I never really understand why anyone would want that. And at diners, if you order orange juice, it's almost always has pulp in it. So I never order orange juice at a diner.
It's weird texture.
Oh, it's like, why? Why would you want that?
We have another, the phone throwing violently at Tony is a call out. So Tony had beat Georgie up with the phone, but we say this is a mafia thing. They get violent with phone. Tony has banged on the phone. We always say Robert De Niro and Goodfellas is the person who kind of made the phone violent thing a thing. There's a Godfather
scene. Tony throws the phone when he finds out Janice took the realtor sign down.
Yeah.
Throws it at AJ. Yeah.
There's some, you know, maybe we don't like communication. Is that the symbol?
But that's exactly what it is. It's a it's a symbol of a lack of communication. We're breaking the communication. And in a future episode of season three, it's the whole episode is symbolized by phones not working.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a motif of the show. Yeah.
Love it. We learn that Paulie also thinks his girlfriend is a size 10, like Christopher did with Aide. And it just kind of, I know they're having this moment in their relationship where it's not good, but they're so alike. And you just kind of want, it's fun. That's funny when he says that. That's a
what size shoe are you?
7.5 or 8. It depends on what type
of
shoe.
So you're
like
8, so you're not Sasquatch.
No, who says Sasquatch?
That's what she says, that size 10.
That's what 8
says. Like, oh. You know, we didn't bring up that the lyrics that the singing bass says are take me to the river, drop me in the water. Literally, pussy.
Literally a fish.
Right, but he says, drop me in the water.
Like a fish.
Like pussy.
Who is a swimming with
they the took pussy to a river and dropped him in the water.
Was it the river or the bay?
Who gives a shit?
It was a river. River? Bay? I always assume it's the Barnegat Bay. It's the only bay I know in New Jersey.
For the record, again, so many of that was great, and so much of it I would have written if you hadn't written it first. But I do have a few that I feel you missed, young lady.
Go.
The book that Carmela questions when she goes, you know, this looks interesting. The title is The Theory of the Leisure Class. And the book basically discusses class systems and how people try to exit their class system for something higher, which is basically what Carmela is doing. She's trying to get out from only donating $5,000 to $50,000.
Oh, interesting.
She's trying to show off her class. So I thought that's why she finds it interesting, because it's about her.
Oh.
Artwork I thought was very interesting in this episode, particularly photographs versus abstract art.
Okay.
There's a comment that Kennedy has these beautiful pictures. In fact, Junior even says these could be a National Geographic, which is basically photojournalism. There's very little writing. The stories in National Geographic are told through photos. And yet if you go, and that's how Dr. Kennedy is, like, no bullshit. Here's a photo. Here's the story. It's a kid, sick kid, healthy kid, whatever. But when you look at the other doctor who talks about the complexities of cancer and how you can go different ways, his artwork is very abstract, you know, blurry lines, triangles. It's clear that he is a more abstract thinker than our blunt Dr. Kennedy.
Interesting. Great catch. Same with Melfi.
Same with Melfi. And it's even mentioned earlier in the episode in Melfi, I like your artwork.
Yes.
So I think that was trying to get our head to, like, all right, pay attention to the artwork in the episode. I thought the Cadillac in general, I just thought was, you know, maybe a broad symbol, but a symbol of social class, trying to go beyond your means.
So that you mean was Angie's car.
Yeah, and she is, you know, Cadillac is clearly outside of her means at this point.
Right.
And then just the idea of distance. Both Kennedy and Carmela, one scene after the other, talk about how they both need distance. You know, for Kennedy, he's talking about the golf club that Tony gives him. Oh, this would give me some distance. And of course, he also is referring to, I'd like to be further away from you, Mr. Soprano. And then Carmela in the next scene with Dr. Krakauer says, I could probably use some distance. And again, he kind of tells her, no, that you're not listening. I'm not saying distance. I'm saying get away from him. Yeah. So I just thought that that was an interesting parallel between these two seemingly unrelated characters. Excuse me.
Very nice.
What did the title mean?
I mean, I think we covered a lot about the second opinion piece of it. There was one interesting that I noticed right in the beginning when they're waiting to hear how Junior's surgery went. There are five men there, Bobby, Tony, and then three older men who are waiting for Junior. One of them looks just like Junior. It was almost like a double of Junior, a second of Junior. It was striking to me. I was confused, actually, and I went, oh, that's not him.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Carmela shows up to Melfi's office alone to get a second opinion on her life and her relationship with Tony. Melfi then refers Carmela to another doctor for a second opinion. Bobby's supposed to be Junior's second opinion at the doctor's appointment and does a bad job of it. So that's why Tony gets looped in as being Junior's second eyes and ears. Angie says the vet wants her to put Coco down, but Angie wants to get another opinion. And Tony says it a few times, a second opinion, just with the health things with Junior.
Yeah, and I'll add on to that. And I honestly didn't write it down because I'm just thinking. But Christopher kind of confides in Adriana about what to do about Paulie. That's his second opinion.
Okay.
And
he goes to Tony.
And then he goes to Tony. And then when Carmela says, you're going on this trip to Washington, and AJ saying, well, so-and-so's not going, Carmela says, Tony, do you want to weigh in? A second opinion. It feels like every little conversation is requiring, I need help. It seems like no one's making decisions in this episode without the help of a second or third or fourth or fifth opinion.
Love it. It's true. It's very true. Most valuable Goomba.
I almost put Carmela's therapist. I know I read it in your notes as a joke, but I want to point out.
No, I'm not truly. He might. It's not for me either. But he is a very close second.
He's an amazing character who is a one and done. And he's the only person in this episode who's not asking for money. I mean,
money or any. Right.
Right. You know, and you said it's a little too obvious. It's a little too, we get it. It's blood money. You don't have to spoon feed us. But it is worth noting, like, when you have an entire show where everyone, that's the second theme, is that money makes the world go round. We're all trying to get money or extort money or give money to show we have money.
Sure.
And then this one guy's like, fuck that. I don't need
your horrible money. Yeah.
Yeah. So bravo to that character and bravo to that actor. I think he's wonderful. He died before this episode aired.
Oh,
this is
really?
His last screen credit. Yeah. And actually an interesting thing about him. So that actor's name is Sully Boyer.
Okay.
And he's been around. He's been an actor in a lot of things. But he was not the original cast. The original cast was theater and movie director Mike Nichols. You would know him because you love the movie The Birdcage. He directed The Birdcage.
Okay, great.
And just one of the great theater directors. And he was cast for some reason, kind of in the same realm as Peter Bogdanovich plays Melfi's therapist. So I think that was kind of a thing. They wanted theater directors and movie directors to play therapists. And he did the read through.
Well, they're directing the characters.
Right. And Mike Nichols did the read through, stood up, said, thank you very much. I'm not right for this, and left. And they got Sully Boyer. He did it, and he dies a month before the episode airs. This is his last screen credit, I think. And what a way to go.
Wow.
Hell of a scene.
I love that self-awareness for someone that can just say, find a better person. This isn't me. I love that. Maybe they knew it was going to be cursed.
Maybe that's it. Mike Nichols has passed since then, but not during this time yet.
Wow. Okay, well, who's our real most valuable Goomba?
It's Carmela.
Carmela. It's the first time we really dig into what she's struggling with. I mean, we touched upon it because she went to Father Phil, and she reminds us that she went to Father Phil during this session with him, right? She says, my priest says to stick it out with him. And the guy's like, oh, it's so good. How's that going? And you know what? If we're talking about from a moral perspective, leaving him is more moral to not enable him, right? And so I guess I mean, we don't think Father Phil's a really good guy anyway. I'm not trying to, you know, I guess it's not surprising to think that he didn't choose the more moral path for Carmella. Also,
something interesting is that the title of this episode, Second Opinion, in itself is a cannoli, because later in this season, she is going to go to another priest for a second opinion. And it's shot in almost the exact same way.
You're kidding.
Her angle, camera angle, his camera angle, but it's not Father Phil. It's a priest she does not know. Who she just, he's a marriage of the two, because he's a priest who also is a psychiatrist. And she's told to go to him. I don't remember who recommends it, but when she goes, he kind of talks about both. And I'm not going to reveal what he says, because we'll definitely talk about that. In fact, that might end up being one of our favorite scenes.
Okay.
But so there's another second opinion coming for Carmella.
I love it. So the whole, it's meta. The whole thing is a second opinion.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, a cannoli. Yes.
It's worth noting also that this is the first time we talk about her pathos. You know, we always kind of get her ethical dilemmas, but we're really seeing her emotional dilemmas right now, that she's being affected by this. Even if I think she's faking at the end, I don't think she's faking throughout the show.
No, I don't know if I go with, I don't.
Sure, you don't have to.
I think she's feeling depressed.
But not to the point. She even comments, like, I feel like everyone else sleeps in this house. I'm going to do it too. I don't know.
Okay. If we pulled this shit or something that made us go, oh my God, that's us. I never knew what King's was, the grocery store, until I moved to Hoboken and we lived, like, our building had one. It was right by our building. It was right underneath us somehow. And then that's where we just would then go shopping in Morristown. And now we live too far from one. That's just not the place we go. But it's such a North Jersey thing. Like, I never knew what King's was. And Christian was like, yeah, King's.
You know where I learned? Where? Pennsylvania.
Oh, it's a Pennsylvania thing too?
There was one right by, it was actually the closest grocery store near my college, Muhlenberg.
See, I always thought Wegmans was your shit.
Wegmans was a little extra drive, but Wegmans was just better. So we took the drive.
Got it.
But in my area, we had a Giant, which is also, I believe, a Pennsylvania thing.
We had
a King's and we had a Wegmans. And if you just needed something fast and didn't feel like spending money, you went to Giant. King's was kind of like the crummier of the three. Like, I think I went there once.
Okay, that's really interesting, because King's is not, I don't think King's is seen as like that here.
Yeah, we didn't go there. Wegmans was if you had some money and you wanted to buy some really good stuff.
Okay.
You went to Wegmans.
I'm about to tell you something that you're going to be really truly upset.
You've never been to a Wegmans?
I've never been to a Wegmans. I've never like lived near one. I have had no reason to go to a Wegmans.
Go.
Okay.
Their generic brand is better than many name brands.
Yeah, well, so stop it. They're all the same shit.
No.
Okay.
Nope.
You're Lunch a Trader Joe's Wegmans, people one of now, those, right?
Yeah, I'm a big Trader Joe's guy.
Also, I've never shopped at a Trader Joe's.
Oh, that's so sad. Well, you've eaten a lot of it, because whenever you eat at my house, there's always an app or something from Trader Joe's.
When you came for Daddy's birthday, you brought these chocolate chip cookies from Trader Joe's, and they were incredible.
Yeah.
Like, incredible. Like, I was like, wow, these are just cookies in a box. And they were so good.
When Carmella's mother says, oh, please, they didn't speak for a year. That's literally what anyone in our family would have said. As if it negates the fact that Junior has cancer. Like, why can't Tony's allowed to be upset just because they didn't talk for a year? But that idea of like, oh, fuck him and his feelings about his uncle. If he cared that much, he wouldn't have stopped talking about. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
I can hear our grandmother saying it. I can hear my mother saying it. Like, oh, please. Like, what is that idea? That was hysterical.
That's a good one. All right. Going back to this grocery store thing, have you ever seen anyone at a grocery store that you didn't want to see and you kind of just did what you had to do and then they came and said hi to you anyway? Like Angie does to Carmella? Or Carmella does to Angie?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 40 years old. It happens a lot. It's happened a lot in my life.
Well, I don't like know a lot of people, I guess, around here to run into that I would know. But that is a really crappy feeling when you're like, I just don't feel like it. And it's like nothing against them. It's just like, you don't feel like it. And then they're like, hi. And I'm an extrovert, so I can only imagine what people feel when they really don't want to talk to people.
But don't you feel like if you happen to be going to the grocery store after work and you look great, you see nobody. But on a Sunday morning when I'm still in pajamas, I haven't even combed my hair, that's when I see five students with their parents who want to stop and talk about how wonderful Mr. Stefanelli is. And I literally, I'm unshaven.
And you have like Batman pajama pants on.
100%. Batman pajamas. And of course, black pants with a navy blue shirt, because that's how I roll. And I'm like, please stop talking to me. I don't want to talk about this. I just leave me alone. That's how it always is. So if you want to avoid people, wear a tux. You'll be fine.
Like, no, or like throw some mascara on, put some extra blush on, look really like healthy and happy. Yeah. Good stuff.
Our grandparents, particularly our mother's parents, were also obsessed with John F. Kennedy. So I very much related to that idea. Our grandfather had a portrait, portrait's the wrong word. In their den, they had two pencil drawings, like 8x11 pencil drawings. One was of my grandfather in the Navy, and the other one was President John F. Kennedy.
Shut.
I'm not kidding you. Up. It was a brown den. As soon as you walked in, there were two chairs. My grandfather's with his ashtray and a cookie jar next to it, and we were allowed to take cookies. And another chair that no one sat in. We always claimed it was Nana's, but no, I never saw Nana sit there. She sat on the couch across. And the TV was on the right, and there was only two things on the wall. And it was two pencil drawings. My grandfather in the Navy, President John F. Kennedy. I swear to God.
Are you sure it was John F. Kennedy? That is so
I'm
weird.
Actually, I'm more positive, and Dad's listening right now, shaking his head. I'm more positive that it was John F. Kennedy than I am.
That it was him in the Navy.
Him in the Navy. But I'm pretty sure it was him in the Navy. It was definitely John F. Kennedy.
Do you think it had to do with the Catholic thing?
Absolutely. Well, okay. Also, our grandparents were huge Democrats. So for him to win and be a Catholic president
it was just a big thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's still weird. I just feel like that's still weird.
They loved him. They loved John Kennedy.
Okay. Just Carmela holding the Gateway back, like those damn cow computers, just like we had one and it was just Gateway is just gone. It's just gone.
Gateway is still one of the best computers I ever owned in my life.
Okay.
It was
big. It was heavy.
Well, they were all big. They were all big then.
I know that that's what it was. Like, that's what I picture. It was huge.
AJ's opinion on his trip was like foreshadowing what this terrible generation of kids are like now.
You're a teacher. You really shouldn't be saying things like that.
Okay.
Elaborate.
Most kids, if they went to Washington, D.C. now, first of all, they would hardly know what's there. They would be like, oh, what's the Washington Monument? What's the Lincoln Memorial? What is that? And they'd come home and go, yo, hotel is really cool. And I would get so frustrated.
Isn't that like teachers' fault that they don't know what the Washington Monument is?
Sure. But I mean, it's everyone's fault. It's everyone's fault. It's society's fault. It's technology's fault. It's an iPhone's fault. It's parents' faults. It's kids' faults.
Why
it's COVID's fault.
Hold on.
Because if it's not being texted to them, they don't care. If it's not on TikTok, they don't care.
You'd think that with access to the internet, they'd know more.
They're a generation of where knowledge is at their fingertips. I mean, at the very least, use ChatGPT, please, to ask what is in Washington, D.C., and the AI will tell you. No, it's not used for anything good. And that's exactly how students would feel. Sorry.
Remember that one time you told me that none of your students knew who Robin Hood was?
I asked, it was a do now. I said, just list anything you know. And then it wasn't the lesson. It was a prelude to get information. We were talking to talk about myths in general.
Okay.
And I just said, I said, Robin Hood.
What was the assignment?
The lesson was about myths. And I think talking.
What was the do now?
Oh, literally, I said, write down everything you can in 5 minutes. Write down anything you can think of when you think of Robin Hood. And kids were like, I don't know who that is. One kid said, do you mean the girl who goes with the wolf, who goes to visit her grandmother? I said, no, that's Little Red Riding Hood. One kid, I swear, was with me. He was as frustrated as I was and said, guys, it's the movie with the fox. And I went, do you really think that's Robin Hood? That's it? That's the one? He just thought I meant, let's talk about a Disney movie. But I took it. I was like, great. Because I'm so happy you at least.
I was just about to say, though, like, if all you have to do to say to him is, okay, but that was a person, but he still knew a lot more about Robin Hood than anybody else.
Correct.
And that fox is weirdly good looking. It's really weird.
Who's the better looking? You've got Russell Crowe, Kevin Costner, Earl Flynn, the fox. Who's the one?
Who's the guy in Men in Tights?
Carl Ailes. I never know how to say his name.
I like it. He's the Princess Bride guy.
He was up for the role in Prince of Tides. Did you know that?
I don't know what Prince of Tides is.
Not Prince of Tides. Oh my God. Prince of Thieves. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner.
And then he got Men in Tights instead.
He said no to the role because of Princess Bride. He thought it's just too close of a role.
That was a good move. Because Princess Bride is like good for him. Because he'll forever be that. Hold on a second. These kids didn't even know Men in Tights.
No, they don't know who Mel Brooks is. They don't know Mel Brooks.
Wait, for realsies?
I teach a film class. I can talk about Mel Brooks all I want.
They don't know Young Frankenstein?
No.
Are you for real? I feel like one people really...
No.
Do you make them watch Young Frankenstein?
I do. Sometimes. Good. Sometimes.
Because okay. That's a good one. I think that's my favorite. I don't know. Men in Tights is really funny, too.
Oh, The Producers is the best one.
Yeah, there's so many good ones. Okay, so... Okay, Daddy used to drink coffee coladas. Remember those Dunkin' Donuts coffee coladas?
I do. Love them.
Do they still even sell them?
They do not.
Because they're like 1,000 calories, literally.
More than that. They did a ranking once. It was more than a Big Mac.
Yeah, right. Like some wild statistic. And they just stopped selling them because people stopped drinking them, I assume.
I guess they have other versions of a cold drink, but the culotta was special. I used to suck them down like Coca-Cola.
Yo, and then sometimes I just want one. I like think about it sometimes when I see a Dunkin' Donuts. I'm like, man, I want a culotta. But they don't have them. It's like an iced coffee, but like not. It was so good.
Well, like meets a Slurpee. It's like a Slurpee meets an iced coffee. But I just want to, and that's, you're right, and I do think of that, but that's not what Tony has, though. Tony says, I went to 31 Flavors, which is Baskin Robbins, and I got you a milkshake.
Oh, I thought it was a Dunkin' Donuts colada.
That's because Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins are owned by the same company, which is why they often have the same cups.
Oh.
Like the one near us.
They like have the pair. Like they're together.
Yeah.
Like a KFC and Taco Bell.
I don't know if they are owned by the same, but sure.
They like sometimes are in the same building. Like you go to one counter to KFC and the other counter to Taco Bell. All right. I'm hungry now. So cannolis. Do you know what I ate right before I got on this call? Like I really needed energy for this ep because there's a lot to talk about.
What?
The blue box.
What's the blue box? Did you go to Tiffany's?
Fuck you. The blue box blues. The Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Oh.
It's what the only meal you've ever cooked for me directly in my entire life and many, 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 many times.
Shapes?
No. No.
Spiral?
No, just elbows.
I'm a fan of the spiral.
Okay, I hear you. That's fine. But do you remember how much mac and cheese used to make just for the two of us? Two boxes, Joseph.
Oh, yeah. We were awful.
For two of us. That's as if I didn't just eat a box by myself.
Right. I was going to say, right.
Remember the song? The Boo Box Blues. Remember?
I don't.
Oh. Yes, you do. The commercial?
Helping in the backyard, had to weed and rake. You want to thank me, Daddy? Here's what it's going to take. I want the blues, Kraft macaroni and cheese. The Boo Box Blues.
Okay, whatever. Cannolis. So I only have three. I'm just going to go for them. Okay. So Tony's beating Georgie up with a random object again, as we said. And again, this is his, like, it's a close of a cannoli, right? He beat him with the phone and then we saw the phone, blah, blah, blah. It all ties together.
Unfortunately, there's more coming.
Georgie gets beat the shit out of more. Aw.
Yeah.
You think Tony's going to hurt Coco the dog when he's telling Angie off? But we know Tony is a huge animal lover, so that would have been extremely out of character, and that is important to remember.
Correct.
And just this tense relationship between Paul and Christopher in general is going to be a thing.
And to piggyback on that, Chris complaining about Paulie not picking up a check, particularly involving champagne, is a very big cannoli.
Oh my God, it's my... You're talking about my single favorite line in the entire Sopranos series.
Close cannoli. Tony told Paulie when Chris got made that now he's subject to strip searches. So it's really Tony's fault that Paulie did this. Tony put it in Paulie's head to you could strip Christopher down.
Interesting.
Yeah. A few episodes ago, the episode where he got made.
Yeah.
This is the first time that we're going to hear mention of another guy Carmela could have married. But the next time we hear it, it's a different guy. So I don't know if that's an issue or if there were two different men.
You mean like a blooper?
I'm actually going to think it's two different men. I just think Mom doesn't know that Carmela also could have married the guy.
Oh, I got you. Her mom just didn't know about the other guy. Or she just had many suitors.
I get the feeling Carmela did.
Okay.
Which makes her choosing Tony all the worse, that she felt this gravitational pull to the mobster, which I would have liked seen explored in The Many Saints of Newark, which we have not talked a lot about because we can't because a lot of spoilers, but
we'll do a bonus app for the whole thing.
I just feel that movie could have explored that more. I would have liked to have seen a movie where that
was. She wasn't really a character in it. She was like behind him in the phone booth or whatever. Another phone booth situation.
Right. Carmela and Angie are going to bump into each other again in a supermarket, but in an entirely different situation.
Love it.
I just like the fact that Junior throws out, hey, I hear there's beef between you and Ralphie. I just like that. That's good writing.
Yeah.
It reminds us, because I actually, watching it, went, oh, that's right. Like, it's almost out of order, the episodes. Like, we're not even going to address the biggest thing that happened.
I completely agree with you. Ralphie's not in this episode. You kind of forget and go, oh, yeah, they have beef, all right, for sure.
Like, is the next episode. The next episode is all about that.
Sure, yeah.
Carmela's discussion with Dr. Krakauer is all a cannoli.
Yeah, it's setting us up, really. It's not even a cannoli. It's just like setting up a plot line.
Right. And just Tony using money to, quote, make Carmela happy. The, I'm going to give you the $50,000.
Okay.
It's not the last time that's going to happen.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Yeah. Let's wrap it up. You go first. Rapid fire this bitch.
Okay. Is it weird they pronounce it balsamic?
It's wrong. They say it wrong. It drives me nuts.
Why though? Because I've never heard anyone, like our parents are from North Jersey. They don't say balsamic.
No. But we also don't really refer to balsamic a lot, but I don't know.
Yeah, but no. Okay. Our parents definitely don't say balsamic. That's ridiculous.
No. It's wrong. Did you notice something interesting after we have the surgery dream, Dr. Kennedy comes out to tell the gangsters, that's where you say you saw a double.
Yeah.
He literally pauses and waits for the gangsters to rise. Almost like, well, on one level, he is John F. Kennedy, so he feels you should rise when I enter the room. But okay. Also just he's an egotistical fuck that feels the need for these men to do that. We haven't really... We'll talk about him. He's frustrating. That's my thing.
Melfi writes down the phone number of her referral for Carmela by heart. Remember when we just knew phone numbers?
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah. It would have been, I'll text it to you.
Let me grab my phone and read it to you. What? She just wrote it down.
This is a serious question. I'm not making a joke here. Throughout the entire series, and I'm talking all 86 episodes.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. We're going to talk about the future.
Okay.
Does Tony ever talk directly to Carmela's mother? No, we have to watch for this.
He talks to her dad.
To the point where it was rude. Like when he leaves the dinner table, she says, it's Sunday dinner. And he goes, I know, but I got to go. And then he says,
bye, Hugh. Yeah.
Hugh, see you later. He does not acknowledge her mother. And I don't think he ever does.
Okay, so we have to watch for this attention. Now. That's funny. Did Carmela just show up to Meadow's dorm without a plan? Or do you think that Meadow was expecting her mom?
No, she showed up.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, you agree. Like, if mommy ever just showed up to my dorm, I'd be like, what? Not that she wouldn't be welcome. It's not like, that's not why I'm saying it's weird. But like, what if I was in class or doing something? I mean, I was in like 1,000 clubs or I was sleeping or like, what if I was with a guy? Like, I don't know. Like,
Carmela's a queen. Carmela just feels she should.
I also have a weird suspicion that she definitely knows Meadow's entire class schedule, like a weird helicopter mom.
Absolutely.
Sure, I don't think does. Mommy knows my major. No, but and I'm not saying that like our mom didn't pay attention. I think she just let us have independence. Like she knew we were fine. She was like, go study, get a degree. Good for you. Like, let me know if you need anything.
Right. All I knew was I had 4 years. That was the rule.
That was the rule. Right. You have four years to do it. Yep. Yeah.
Don't screw up. But we're fine.
Again. And I hope mommy doesn't listen. I hope daddy's not listening thinking you're saying bad. I mean that as a compliment to our mom. She just let us do it.
I do too. And look at us. Now we are two of the most successful podcasters
in the world.
In brick. Yeah. Oh, I was going to say in brick, New Jersey. But okay.
Oh, and I had another dorm room comment. Caitlin can just smoke cigarettes in the dorm room?
You're not supposed to, but she did.
Yeah, but the smell of smoke. I mean, like, you can't just get away with that. That's...
Yeah, unless the implication was that she smokes so that it's on her body.
It's on her clothes and stuff.
So it could be that.
Like smoking out the window? You put the shower on.
Do couples have the sexual past conversation like that? Not that it ends that way. I mean, that's a terrible way for it to end. And Christopher's an asshole at that moment. But have you ever done that? Sat with your husband and like had the... Who is your oldest? Who is your first?
No, no, but I think people do that.
Really?
I think we're like it was in your past. I don't need to know. Like, why do I need to know that type people? But I think people do that. Yeah. And I don't think it's weird that they do.
But I do know my wife's past in general and she knows mine, but I'm knowing the way they're doing it.
Right.
Like,
no, you're right. Like we know general stuff, but I'm like, who is your old? Yeah, you're right.
Right. It felt very weird. And I think both of them are smart enough. They don't want to know. And Christopher even implies he knows one. Like he says, not that guy. He's only famous in Jersey. Like, so you've had this conversation before?
Yeah.
Like it just felt really, that was a weird thing. It ended terribly. I actually don't like that scene. I don't find it necessary. I don't really like the fact that they're having this really nice episode together. And then it gets physical.
Calls her, yeah.
I didn't like that. So I would have cut that from the.
Okay.
From the episode.
Okay. I'll call David Chase and let him know.
Yeah, you let him know.
Okay. It really bothers me that Paulie knows Christopher's holding back and then Christopher admits it to Aid. Like, it makes Paulie, it's disrespectful to Paulie and it's kind of setting up Aid. Is she an accomplice? Like, it's like that parallel with Carmela. I don't like that he does that. It just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Serious question, because we are both fans of the movie My Cousin Vinny. I have often said it is my favorite movie of all time.
It's my second favorite movie of all time.
It is in your top two. You are a particularly big fan of Marissa Tomei's performance of Mona Lisa Vito.
She's perfect.
One, if you ask me what my favorite curse word is, dickhead is up there.
Because
I love
of
the
her.
Word dickhead.
Because of her.
But it's because of her. And I've always said she has the best delivery of the word dickhead. Tony Sirico in this episode is pretty damn close to how good she is. Who says dickhead better?
He has to. By law, you're entitled. It's called disclosure, you dickhead.
Who is it? The FBI. Come on, dickhead. Open up.
What do you think?
Marissa. But Tony has a good one. You're right. You're right, but it's Marissa because she's perfect.
She's the queen.
She's the queen.
Okay. That's fair.
You kind of want to cheer when Tony goes to bat for Junior with Dr. Kennedy at the golf course. You like really want to cheer him. There's a few times where you're like kind of cheering for Tony in this season so far. Like he's like our true hero here.
Well, and in an episode that's not about Tony, Tony is very back and forth. Like the complexity of him, like there are times where I absolutely hate him in this episode.
Yeah.
And then there's times where I'm like, oh God, I want to give you a big hug. Like you're being amazing. To both Carmela and Junior. Like it's all a mix on both. Yeah. It's not like he's an asshole to one and great to the other. He's an asshole to both and great to both. He's really good.
I mean, the one moment I'm thinking of in the season where you really are cheering for him is when you think that Melfi might say yes at the end of her episode. Ooh, right? You're cheering for Tony. You're like, please tell him so we can go get him. It reminded me of that. Like, you're really like, yeah, Tony, get him. Like, stick up for Junior. It was a good moment.
I found a very particular moment as a teacher, and any teacher listening will agree with me. So the dean of Columbia is, you know, wooing Carmela.
Sure.
And starts bragging about Meadow. You know, she pays attention. First of all, I love he says, well, I haven't met her personally.
Yeah.
Okay. But you should have. She's really attentive in class. She participates. She contributes. These are literally, we get a list when we do progress reports on the computer. And like, I know number six is pleasure to have in class. Basically, I know that if I like your kid, you're getting number six. And then like number seven is fulfills requirements. That's, you get a
C. They do their work.
You're doing your work. I don't really, whatever. He literally is reading off that checklist, but she is hearing these amazing things. I'm like, Carmela, he does not know your daughter. He has not talked to her professors. He's literally just giving you bullshit tropes of what you say about a kid. It was unbelievable.
But he's a paisan.
He's a paisan. Yeah.
That's funny.
Little stroke
of
the pen.
That's a good call. I obviously did not know that. That's funny that you
noticed that. It was hysterical.
That's great. The doctor giving Junior chemo is Tony Hill from Veep and Arrested Development. He's a funny dude.
Veep is maybe one of the funniest shows of all time.
Yeah, I've never watched it front to back, but it would follow Game of Thrones. So I like caught episodes.
Emmy award winning Tony Hill won an Emmy for Veep. That's how funny
that show. Yeah, he's them together. And okay, so did this 50 grand thing really save their marriage in this moment? Like now they're not going to fight for like a while.
No, that's my point. She was never going to leave him, but she's faking it. That's my point.
Okay.
You could look at, listen, it's beautiful both ways. It's beautiful writing. That's what's great about this show. On one hand, she's faking it. She's a brilliant manipulator that Tony cannot get past. He loses to her manipulation. Or Tony gives her $50,000 to put on so her name could be etched on this fucking wall, and he doesn't even know he saved their marriage. So you could look at it both ways. Look what you did. You saved your marriage. You don't even know it. So it works either way. Another unanswerable question of this episode. Did Bobby stop at White Castle?
Yeah, 100%. I smell it.
Burger boy.
He calls Burger boy. Burger boy. Yeah, no, he definitely stopped at White Castle because he looks like hurt but guilty.
Do you like White Castle?
Yeah.
I find it disgusting.
Okay. Why?
Our father, I used to love it. It's as I've gotten older, I hate it. Our father could eat like a big row of burgers.
I've never seen our father eat White Castle ever once in my 32 years of living.
Not since I was young, but I do know that when he was younger, like before we were born, he told me that was his place. He loved White Castle.
Cool.
So we can call him Burger Boy.
Burger Boy. Dr. Kennedy is such an asshole.
He's a fucking prick.
How on earth could you ever really hold that much of a grudge for a patient going through this treatment because they wanted a second opinion? Like, it's such a hard thing to go through and, like, I don't like it, obviously.
But he's an asshole even in the beginning. Like, I feel he's an asshole throughout. He's actually a great performance, but the character is just awful.
And Junior loves him. Junior loves him.
That's all I got. What do you got? Anything else?
All right. That's app 7. You liked it?
It's fine.
I like it a lot. I think it's a good
Liked it more. I'm very excited about the next one.
Okay. That's great. Thanks to our listeners for analyzing season 3, episode 7, Second Opinion with us.
Stop. I want to do it.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. That's all from us for now. We'll talk to you soon, 2 weeks, when we discuss the next episode, He Is Risen, with our special guest, my best friend since high school, Jacqueline DeVella. She's your best friend.
That's the joke. Yeah. But she's my best friend.
We love her. She's a big fan. We can't wait to have her on. This has been The Sibling Sit Down.
Thanks for listening to The Sibling Sit Down. Please remember to like or follow the show on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. So you never forget about it.